Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Hosea chapter 8, which I will entitle Sowing to the Wind and Reaping the Whirlwind. This chapter was written by the prophet Hosea in the 9th century BC before the destruction of northern Israel in 722. Hosea's ministry was mainly to the northern Israelites, although in previous chapters he did save some of his prophetic spleen for Judah, but most of his prophecies were against northern Israel. So we start now in Hosea chapter 8, verses 1 through 6. Put the trumpet to your lips. Like an eagle, the enemy comes against the house of the Lord, because they have transgressed my covenant and rebelled against my law. They cry out to me, "My God, we of Israel know thee." Israel has rejected the good. The enemy will pursue him. They have set up kings, but not by me. They have appointed princes, but I did not know it. With their silver and gold they have made idols for themselves, that they might be cut off. He has rejected your calf, O Samaria, saying, "My anger burns against them. How long will they be incapable of innocence?" For from Israel is even this: a craftsman made it, so it is not God. Surely the calf of Samaria will be broken to pieces. In verse 1, Hosea says, put the trumpet to your lips. A trumpet was used, of course, to warn of impending invasions. Like an eagle, the enemy comes. Well, the eagle is often used to refer to Babylon, but this is Assyria. But some people have suggested that perhaps this is referring to Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. I don't think so. Let's look at how Babylon is often compared to an eagle. Ezekiel 17:3. Thus says the Lord God, a great eagle with great wings, long pinions, and a full plumage of many colors came to Lebanon and took away the top of the cedar. That's referring to Babylon. Jeremiah 48:40. For thus says the Lord, behold, one will fly swiftly like an eagle and spread out his wings against Moab. Again, that's Babylon. Jeremiah 49:22. Behold, he will mount up and swoop like an eagle and spread out his wings against Bozrah. That's in Edom, Babylonian knocking out Edom. And the hearts of the mighty men of Edom in that day will be like the heart of a woman in labor, because the Babylonians came. Daniel 7:4. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. That's the four beasts in Daniel's famous vision. So the word eagle does make one want to think of Babylon, but this is obviously, the context is so much Assyria. We're going to take it as Assyria. And this eagle is coming as Shalmaneser the V when he came in 722 and wiped out the capital of northern Israel, which was Samaria. Ephraim was the province and Samaria was the big city in that province, and Samaria was the current capital of northern Israel. So the eagle comes, and the reason was is because they, the Ephraimites, have transgressed my covenant and rebelled against my law. In verse 2, they cry out to me, "My God, we of Israel know thee." In other words, their religion was of the formal sort. Lips only, heart not involved. Verse 3, Israel has rejected the good. The enemy will pursue him. That happened in 722 when the Assyrians came under Shalmaneser the V and besieged Samaria for 3 months and finally destroyed the city. Verse 4, they have set up kings, but not by me. The northern Israelites set up King Jeroboam the I when they broke away from the southern kingdom. That was not done by God, not by me, Yahweh says through Hosea. Jeroboam the I reigned from 931 to 910. He was the founding king of Samaria. He was set up by the people of the north, northern Israel, not by God. They have appointed princes in verse 4, but I did not know it. I, Yahweh, did not know these princes. Who were the princes? Those were the subordinate officials. So the whole government of northern Israel was ungodly and illegal. Continuing in verse 4, with their silver and gold, they have made idols for themselves that they might be cut off. Well, who's the they that is cut off? Cut off, of course, means killed. Could be the makers of the idols. It could be the idols themselves will be killed off or destroyed. When people destroyed them, the Assyrians destroyed them to get the silver and gold the idols were made of. It could be the worshippers of the idols were cut off. It could be all of the above. The makers of the idols, the worshippers of the idols, and the idols themselves. The makers of the idols themselves, the worshippers of the idols, or maybe all above. Destruction is coming. Verse 5, he has rejected your calf, O Samaria. That calf, of course, refers to the golden calf, false Yahweh worship that Jeroboam the I set up with one altar in Dan in the north and Bethel in the south. God has rejected that calf, that golden calf. God says in verse 5, my anger burns against them. Now, the them is ambiguous. It could be the calves themselves. God is angry at the golden calves, or it could be that God is angry at the worshipers of the calves. I suspect the latter is true. Of course, he's probably angry at both. How long will they be incapable of innocence? The northern Israelites were not innocent. They were incapable of innocence from the 931 B.C., from the get-go, from the time that they formed their rebellious nation. Verse 6, for from Israel is even this, a craftsman made it, so it is not God. So Israel is even this, even what? The fact that Israel has golden calf worship. A craftsman made it, made the calf, so it is not God, because nobody makes God. Surely the calf of Samaria will be broken to pieces, and it was when the Assyrians came in 722. We go now to Hosea 8, verses 7 through 9. For they sow the wind, and they reap the whirlwind. The standing grain has no heads, it yields no grain. Should it yield, strangers would swallow it up. Israel is swallowed up. That's northern Israel. They are now among the nations like a vessel in which no one delights. For they have gone up to Assyria like a wild donkey all alone. Ephraim, that's northern Israel, has hired lovers. Ephraim is the largest province in northern Israel. Now, verse 7 has that familiar metaphor, sowing the wind and reaping the whirlwind. Normally you sow seeds in the ground, and the little tiny seed gets bigger and bigger and grows a grain of wheat or whatever. Here, though, the metaphor is you sow the wind, you plant wind in the ground, and what comes out? A whirlwind, a tornado, a hurricane. Little tiny bit of wind yields a huge amount of wind, 30, 60, 100-fold increase, depending on what type of atmospheric disturbance you manage to grow. So the northern Israelites sowed seeds of unrighteousness, and they reaped the whirlwind of destruction as a result. The standing grain has no heads, it yields no grain. That's judgment. Sounds like Deuteronomy 28 judgment. Curses for not obeying God. And even if the standing grain of northern Israel grew any grain, strangers, i.e. invaders, would swallow it up like the Assyrians, the Assyrian army. Verse 8, Israel is swallowed up, referring to the Assyrians coming in 722. They are now among the nations like a vessel in which no one delights. Now, of course, that now is prophetically speaking, they are not going to be sown among the nations until 722. But for all practical purposes, as far as Hosea is concerned and as Yahweh is concerned, they're just as good as gone. They are now among the nations like a vessel in which no one delights. A vessel, of course, is probably talking about a wine bottle. Now listen to how Adam Clark describes that wine bottle. Rotten, corrupted skin bottle. Soiled, unclean, infectious, to be despised, abhorred, not used. Rotten, corrupted skin bottle made of goat, deer, or calf hide. And Clark says those bottles are still commonly used in Asia and Africa, and I'm sure they still are even today. But the point is, people don't like that kind of vessel that's rotten, unclean, and infectious. You don't want to drink out of that. Well, that's why people look at northern Israel. Who wants to have anything to do with these guys anymore? They are history. They are toast. Verse 9, for they have gone up to Assyria like a wild donkey, all alone. When did they go up to Assyria? Well, two cases, which I mentioned several times in the previous audio, maybe even in the previous two audios, I can't remember. But the first time a king of Israel went to Assyria was when Menachem did that. Now, Menachem ruled the northern kingdom from 752 to 742. He gave 1,000 talents of silver to Pul, also known as Tiglath-Pileser III, to get Tiglath-Pileser III off his back. We read that in 2 Kings 15:19. Pul, that's Tiglath-Pileser III, Pul, king of Assyria, invaded the land, so Menachem gave Pul 75,000 pounds of silver, that's 1,000 talents, so that Pul would support him to strengthen his grip on the kingdom. So basically, Menachem bought Tiglath-Pileser off. But Menachem went up to Assyria like a wild donkey all alone. Nobody wants to have anything to do with a wild donkey. And so poor old Menachem had to go to Assyria to try to buy them off. And of course, Hoshea did the same thing in about 730 B.C. Hoshea ruled from 732 to 722. He was the last king of northern Israel. And in 2 Kings 17:3, we read this. Shalmaneser, that's Shalmaneser V, king of Assyria, attacked Hoshea, and Hoshea became his vassal and paid him tribute money. They went to Assyria like a wild donkey. Now, donkey is also known as an ass. I like ass better. That seems to describe northern Israel a little bit better. I had a horse once. We called him Mr. Perfect. That was short for Mr. Perfect Ass because of his personality. As Adam Clark says, an ass is jealous of its liberty and suffers no rival. Now listen to this. This is from Adam Clark. One male wild ass will keep a whole flock of females to himself, suffer no other to approach them, and even bite off the genitals of the colts, lest in process of time they should become his rivals. Bite off the genitals of his rivals. No wonder donkeys tend to be all alone. Here's what John Gill says about these donkeys, these asses. Quote, sottish and stupid as the ass, and as headstrong and as unruly as that, and like it, lustful and impetuous in their lust, running to and fro for the satisfying of said lust, and taking no advice, nor suffering themselves to be controlled, and being alone, become an easy prey to the Assyrian lion. That's northern Israel that was sottish and stupid as the ass. Now, a little agricultural note for all you farmers out there. I'm not a farmer, but I've always wondered what the difference between a donkey and an ass and so forth, and a mule and a horse and all that. They seem sort of similar. Well, donkeys have two genders. A male donkey is a jack, and a female donkey is a jenny. Now, if you take a jack, a male donkey, and a female horse, which is a mare, so a jack and a mare will give you a mule. And I think mules are sterile. They can't have any more children. A henny is when you take a male horse, a stallion, and a jenny, a female donkey, mate them together, and you get a henny. Well, that little rabbit trail was absolutely unnecessary, really, to understand our verse. So we will continue looking at verse 9. At the very end of the verse, Ephraim has hired lovers. That means that heathen subsidized the neighboring heathen states, such as Assyria. We already mentioned Menachem, 1,000 talents, 75,000 pounds of silver, and Hoshea paid tribute to Assyria. That's what Hosea is referring to when he says that Ephraim has hired lovers. We go now to Hosea 8, verses 10 through 14, and we will finish this chapter. Even though they hire allies among the nations, now I will gather them up, and they will begin to diminish because of the burden of the king of princes. Since Ephraim has multiplied altars for sin, they have become altars of sinning for him. Though I wrote for him 10,000 precepts of my law, they are regarded as a strange thing. As for my sacrificial gifts, they sacrifice the flesh and eat it, but the Lord has taken no delight in them. Now he will remember their iniquity and punish them for their sins. They will return to Egypt. For Israel has forgotten his maker and built palaces, and Judah has multiplied fortified cities. But I will send a fire on its cities that it may consume its palatial dwellings. Notice that Judah is mentioned here in verse 14 as receiving judgment. That would occur for Judah in 586 when the Babylonians got them. Most of the chapter is about Israel. But as I took pains to point out in previous chapters, Judah is included lots of times when Hosea denounces the sin of the Jews. In verse 10, Yahweh still speaking through Hosea, now, even though they hire allies among the nations. Now, the Holman Christian Study Bible translates allies as lovers, even though they hire lovers among the nations, like prostitutes. The ASV Darby and Young's Little Translation says they hire among the nations. Bible in Basic English says they give money to the nations for help. God's Word says they sold themselves among the nations. KJV says they have hired among the nations. So, this, of course, is referring to Menachem and Hosea paying Assyria to keep Assyria off their back. Also, Hosea tried to get help from Egypt. We read that in 2 Kings 17:4, and this is cited by the commentator Benson. But the king of Assyria discovered Hosea's conspiracy. Remember, Hosea's the last king. He ruled from 732 to 722. Hosea had sent envoys to So, king of Egypt, and had not paid tribute money to the king of Assyria as in previous years. Therefore, the king of Assyria arrested him and put him in prison. So we see from that verse that northern Israel is hiring allies among the nations, going down to Egypt. At the end of verse 10, Yahweh says, now I will gather them up. Now there's a question as to what that them refers to. Ellicott says it refers to the northern Israelites. Now I will gather the northern Israelites up, and they will begin to diminish. That's the way I took it when I first read it, without thinking about it. Other commentators say it refers to the nations. Now I will gather the nations up, and they will begin to diminish. In other words, I will gather up the nations, and the nations will then fight against the northern Israelites. And then they will begin to diminish. The northern Israelites will begin to diminish because God has gathered up the nations against them. Well, I guess that's reasonable, but the Cambridge commentary denies that, and Ellicott denies it. So we're going to go with the northern Israelites. Now I will gather up the northern Israelites, and they will begin to diminish because of the burden of the king of princes. The burden would be the tribute imposed by the Assyrian king, like that tribute that I just mentioned that Hoshea didn't pay. And that, of course, led to the invasion of 722, because when you don't pay the Assyrians, they wait until the next campaign season, and they come and burn your cities down and besiege you. Now, this burden is said to belong to the king of princes. The king is the Assyrian king. Now, the princes reference might be to the princes of the Assyrian provinces. The Cambridge commentary suggests it could refer to the title of the Assyrian king, who was called King of Kings, on his monuments, the King of Kings, the King of Princes. But at any rate, it is Assyria, and Assyria was a burden to the northern Israelites. Verse 11, since Ephraim has multiplied altars for sin, remember it was supposed to be one altar in northern Israel. Actually, it's supposed to be one altar in Israel, and that altar was supposed to be in Jerusalem. We read that in Deuteronomy 12:5 in the law. Instead, you must turn to the place Yahweh your God chooses from all your tribes to put his name for his dwelling and go there. And of course, that place was Jerusalem. But the northern Israelites violated the law. They set up two illegal golden calf altars, as Benson points out. And Ellicott points out the worship of God was degraded into the sensuous approaching Baal worship. In other words, things had gotten so bad, not only were they golden calves, but lots of unfortunate religious practices going along. Cult prostitution, maybe? I don't know. Ellicott seems to think so. But the point is the northern Israelites multiplied altars of sin. Now, that might be referring to the two golden calf altars at Dan and Bethel, but I wonder. I'm sure they put up altars everywhere for the Baals. They multiplied these altars. They have become altars of sinning for him. Now, the simplest way to read that is that the altars which multiplied had become the altars of sinning, and that sin was imputed to the northern Israelites because they were sacrificing on heathen altars in Israel. However, one of my commentators said that this could refer to exiled Israelites who were forced to worship idols in Assyria against their will. Unlike the Babylonians, who didn't force the exiles from Judah to do that, but the Assyrians did. You have to worship our strange God. I don't think so. I think he's referring to the sin that the northern Israelites were committing in northern Israel as they worshiped on their strange illegal altars. Verse 12, though I wrote for him 10,000 precepts of my law, Yahweh continues, they, the precepts of his law, are regarded as a strange thing. Now, there we see that phrase 10,000. That just means a whole heap of. It does not mean literally 10,000 precepts. Of course, this is Hebrew hyperbole. I mention that because it reminds me of that 1,000-year period in Revelation 20, the millennium. People love to say, that's a literal 1,000 years. No, it's not. It's a number that means a long time. When you get a big number that's a multiple of 10, 10 is the number of completion, perfection, 10 times 10 times 10 times 10. Even the Chinese have the same expression. Yiwen is the number 10,000, literal number, but they use it for everything. Yiwen Shiqing, 10,000 matters we have to deal with. It doesn't mean 10,000 matters literally. It just means a whole heap of. So even though God wrote for northern Israel a whole heap of legal precepts, the northern Israelites look at them and say, what is this? Never heard of that before. Verse 13 is for my sacrificial gifts. Yahweh continues, they sacrifice the flesh and eat it. That would be the peace offerings, of course. But the Lord has taken no delight in them. Why? Because they're going through formal ritual and not through heart worship. There must be 10,000 verses that say that God is not happy with formalistic worship. I'm not going to quote them for you. I take no delight in sacrifices and so forth. Now, that doesn't mean that God didn't want them to sacrifice. He wanted the formality, but he wanted the heart that goes with the formality. There are certain super spiritual Christians who love to reject the outward ritualistic forms of Christianity and say, oh, they're evil. Well, no, it's not the forms that are evil. It's the people who are hypocritically going through the motions and conforming to those forms. That's what's evil. Verse 13, now Yahweh, he will remember their iniquity and punish them for their sins. They will return to Egypt. Now, how is returning to Egypt a punishment for their sins? Here's some options. Option number one, after both the Assyrian and Babylonian invasions, survivors went down to Egypt. Now, of course, we know that Jeremiah and the rump of Israel went down to Egypt, as we read in the book of Jeremiah. I didn't realize that it also happened after the Assyrian invasion in 722, but I wouldn't doubt it. People running, they flee to Egypt. Well, that's option number one, a physical fleeing of Egypt. Option number two, they went to Egypt because they worshiped cows just like the Egyptians did. So when Yahweh says that the northern Israelites will return to Egypt in verse 13, what he means is the northern Israelites will return to the cow worship of Egypt. Possible, but I don't think that's what it is. I think it's just a symbol for bondage, option number three, because Israel spent a long time in slavery in Egypt, and so Egypt became a symbol. So you want to go back to Egypt, the bondage of Egypt. It's a common symbol for bondage. And so Yahweh is saying in verse 13, the northern Israelites will go back to Egypt because they're going back to bondage when the Assyrians come and scatter them all over the ancient Near East. Verse 14, for Israel has forgotten his maker and built palaces. Ah, a little materialism there. Built a palace. You know, material wealth never lasts. A palace never lasts. Judah has multiplied fortified cities, and as I pointed out, Judah is now mentioned as an object of God's wrath. Fortified cities never last. But I will send a fire on its cities that it may consume its palatial dwellings. And of course, that happened in 586 when the Babylonians came and burnt Jerusalem to the ground. And on that happy note, ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with this chapter in Hosea 8, and we're prepared to go to Hosea 9. In our next audio, Hosea 9, I will entitle The Lord Will Punish Israel, Part 1. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.